So you ready to go, Amelia? It's 10 o'clock, right?
It is 9:59. Can I take a inventory is not the word, but can I let everybody know who's on the call?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm on the call. John Merchant, Larry Bain, welcome. Linda Butler is joining us, and so is Cindy Chow. Gail from the River Valley Times, Jeanette Han is joining from ClearSource, Richard Gears, Mark Martin, welcome Mark, Paul Stevenson, Tom Henning, Mr. Timothy Mabee, and Vanessa Burke from the Poon Group. Welcome everyone.
I'm here.
You ready to roll?
I am ready to roll. Call the meeting to order.
Okay, the Finance Committee meeting called to order. Item two, comments from the public. Anybody wish to comment now, or we can also take them one at a time if you would like to as we go through the items. Anybody need anything now? Okay. Tom, we're going to, per your request, I guess we'll move directly to item five, and then we'll go back to item three. Hello.
Tom, are you there?
I see item five. I just don't hear Tom.
That's fine. Again, common mistake of not unmuting myself.
Okay. You're all set. Go ahead.
Presenting today is our 2018-19 fiscal year audit by Larry Bain, who's been doing the audit for a number of years for the district. The 18-19 audit was particularly difficult because of turnover right in the middle of the fiscal year. I showed up in November and our controller was no longer with us by mid-December. So we were very challenged and Larry was very patient and kind of going through and cleaning stuff up for final journal entries. And I think it's a good result given the circumstances we were dealt, and we passed out the audit last night, yesterday evening, shortly after six. And this is the first time you guys would have seen it.
The audit is available on the internet on our website for anyone who is joining us and wants to look at it at home. The audit and the budget were both added last night to the web.
And so basically the process at Rancho Murrieta has been, Larry comes to the committee meeting and just kind of says, here's the audit. You have any preliminary questions? And that puts staff and it also puts Larry in a position where we can be prepared for the board meeting. And Larry is on the agenda for the board meeting on May 20th. So other than that, I'd just like to introduce Larry. And Larry, if you are available, if anybody has any questions, I would appreciate it. And then we can move on.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Yeah, so this is Larry Bain. And yeah, Tom did mention that it was a challenging audit. And yeah, I would concur. But Tom and Cindy, they work very diligently to help me get all the records together needed so that I could opine on the financials. And then with the assistance of Vanessa Berkey and the Poon Group, It did come together, but it's more delayed than a normal year. Normally, we would be presenting the audit at like the November meeting. So we did have starts and stops, and then the COVID did not help things out either. So anyway, but here we are, and what you have is a draft, and there will be some edits to the reports. Especially in the community facility district report, I'm still reviewing some of the Poon Group, some of their review notes, and there will likely be some additional adjustments to those financial statements. So what you have are still drafts, and the final reports will be ready for the May 20th board meeting. Okay. And so I won't go over in great detail, but I'll just give a little bit of an overview. Feel free to ask questions as I'm going along. but on page one of the main financial statements, This is the, the independent auditor's report. And this is where I give an opinion on your financial statements. And so you'll see at the bottom of page one is the unqualified opinion. And that's what you would expect. If I was unable to substantiate the numbers in the report, then you would see a qualified opinion or a disclaimer. but this is a clean, unqualified opinion. Okay. The next section, starting on page three and going to page eight, this is the management's discussion and analysis, and this is prepared by Tom and Cindy and reviewed by myself and the Poon Group. And this just gives a brief overview of the activities that occurred during the 2018-19 fiscal year. There's certain required components of this report that have been met. And my responsibility is just to do a limited review. I don't give an opinion on this section of the report. But again, it's just a brief overview and something that could give you a feel for what transpired during the year. The next sections are the financial statements, and those go from page 9 to page 17. And I wasn't going to go over all the numbers. I will say on page 11 in the water fund, there was a change in net position, a positive, approximately $600,000. And the reason for that is largely due to the Prop 84 project, where the water recycling assets were capitalized, so they're not showing as an expenditure in this report, but the grant revenue was showing as revenue. So because about $600,000 in expenses is going into the asset section and not expenses, and the revenue is showing up here, the result is a large change in net position. And then the other item I'll point out on page 12 is in the security fund, and the security fund has a negative net position at the end of the year of about $376,000. And my understanding in discussion with Tom is that with the new cost allocation plan that is going to go into effect in the 2021 fiscal year, more of the expenditures will be allocated to security. And so that is an area that you will need to review the rate structure to make sure that the security fund is generating enough money to support the activity. Okay. And I wasn't going to go over any of the other information in the financial statements unless there were questions through page 17. And if not, the next section is the notes to the financial statements starting on page 18. And really, this gives a lot more detail about what's going into the financial statements. It gives a breakdown of where your cash and investments are, gives a breakdown of the detail of your fixed assets, and then the long-term debt, which are long-term liabilities. The district only had a capital lease. That was the only debt, but there were long-term obligations for the OPEB, which is the post-retirement healthcare, and then the the pension, the CalPERS pension would be the other long-term liability. And the pension is, obviously a large concern, being that it's about $3.1 million liability at June 30, 2019. And with CalPERS, obviously it's going to be a very bad year, and as a result I would expect future contributions and contribution rates to increase to cover some of the losses that, that they're going through right now. They do spread that out over a period of time. I believe they amortize that over a 5-year period. So you wouldn't see a hit all at once, but still in the long term, I'd say you could expect an increase in the contribution rate. And then the net OPEB liability is $1.5 million. And there's more information, more detail on the pension on pages 48, 49, and 50. These are required supplementary information on the schedule of the contributions and the changes in those contributions and liability. So that's all I was going to talk about on the financial statements, Tom, unless there was something you wanted me to focus on.
You good?
No, I'm good. I'm good, Barney. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being patient with us. It was very, very rewarding to get to this point.
Yeah, it was a struggle, as you mentioned, but the board should know just how much work Tom and Cindy and Vanessa went through to get to this point. It was a huge challenge with the turnover in staff. Just a lot of knowledge went out the door. So just a really good job in picking up the pieces.
So just to clarify, Larry, then on the 20th, you'll make a complete formal presentation on the completed
audit? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that is right. Yeah. And I will do another review on the financial statement. And as I mentioned, the CFD report in all likelihood will have some changes as well. But
right.
Yes, those should be completed, finalized by May 20th.
I did get a quick look through it, and you know, the first place I go is the cash flow, and that looked pretty good. So all in all, the only question I had would be establishing value, you know, as you go through and you begin to depreciate assets, and I can't remember the exact number, but I think I remember something like $18 million off the asset base that was depreciated down. How does that relate to when you do a reserve study, establishing actual cash value or replacement value for a specific asset, for example, a water plant?
Yeah. So on page 25, that is the detail of the capital assets, and there's a line item there for accumulated depreciation.
Yeah.
Example would be like water fund,
right,
has a $13.8 million accumulated depreciation at June 30, 2019. So when assets come online, they are depreciated over a period of time. And I believe the district policy has been to set aside a 50% reserve for replacement, is my understanding. Tom, does that sound right to you?
I'm not going to say it out loud right now. I would have to look it up.
Yeah. But I believe historically that has been the policy. And as far as in a reserve study, that would be something that the district will need to consider, will be replacing assets.
Yeah.
It'll last forever.
All right. I'm good on an interim basis, Larry. Thank you for the preliminary. Anybody have any questions or need to go through any part of this? So you're good, Larry? I guess
okay.
you can click off and go audit somebody else.
Yeah, very good. Okay, thank you.
All right, I'm signing off too, guys. Thank you.
Okay.
It's Vanessa. All right, bye.
So bye. Then we'll go back, I guess, to item three. Tom?
This is Paul's item.
Yes, this is my item.
Okay.
So good morning, Finance Committee staff and public. This item before you to consider the approval of environmental compliance consulting services. So presented the idea and followed through on getting environmental compliance services for the district versus having the full-time position in-house. So we've had difficulty recruiting for the environmental compliance worker position. And so this seemed like a slam dunk route to move forward on, getting a consultant who is well-versed in what the regulatory requirements are will help us establish our procedures and basically show staff how to do things properly, have these procedures in place, and then possibly in the future, we'll have staff, we can bring that position back in as a full-time position and have staff run with it at that point. However, at that point as well, we could also consider extending contracting this out. So it's going to save the district quite a bit of money in the interim and help establish our program. The lowest bidder, qualified bidder, was Stratus Environmental Inc. They're a local firm, and we've done some work with them in the past, about 8 years ago or so, and they're a good group to work with. Any questions?
No, I thought it was a good idea. The other part of this is when you start factoring, Tom and I had some talks in the last couple of days, a little bit around fringe and essentially what it costs us in over and above salary to pay for an employee. So when you start considering those, the fringe that's attached completely to each employee that we have in the district, a lot of this stuff starts making sense. And this particularly I thought was a good idea, and I have no problem with it at all.
Great, thank you. Yeah, you'll see as Tom presents the budget, I think a big drop in the earlier presented costs in the budget or rates are down due to this. So
yeah. Okay. We need to do any more with this?
Approve it to go to the board.
Okay. Tim, yes?
Yes, I agree, Paul. Thank you for putting that together.
Okay. Done deal. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Item 4, budget revision. Tom?
All right, thank you. And this may take a while or may go quick. Basically, we're asking to review some changes we made to the Prop 218 proposed budget that was presented to the board at a special board meeting on the 26th of March. And prior to that, we had no idea that we would be where we are today with the COVID-19. The budget presented in March was mostly built in January and February and early into March. And by the time we had the meeting, it was held as a Zoom meeting, but nobody had any idea this was going to last this long. So it was requested that we look at options for reducing the impact on the residents. So we took a budget that was originally 7.388 in revenue and expenses, and we lowered that to 7,222,000. And the reasons we were able to do this are pretty significant, and it kind of, there's a contradiction in how it goes. But Amelia, if you could go down a little bit and just look at a chart we put together. And, you know, we have a Prop 218 notice. It's a sample bill. It's what everybody gets when they get their Prop 218 notice in the mail. And it's a pretty easy read. It says your water meter bill is going to go up this percentage. The use of water per 100 square feet or cubic feet of water is going to go up this amount. And your sewer rate is going to go up this amount. Your trash on average is going to go up this amount for a standard trash can. Sewer and drainage, by law, we can only raise the rates of sewer and drainage 2% per year, and that doesn't even come close to meeting the demands that it costs to run the sewer and drainage.
Sorry about that.
So by reducing the budget the way we did, we've lowered the average monthly bill increase from $766 for the residents behind the gates to 177 or 4.12% to 0.95%. And you can see that is a decrease of 589 per month. And then we decreased the Murrieta Village and Gardens too, Bill, a total of 545 or a 0.9% increase. It's a very dramatic decrease. It's about 165,000 change. And overall, I can walk through where the changes were made. Does anybody have any questions at this time?
Keep going.
Okay. So if you start going to the major proposed reductions, first of all, we had to talk with the developers to find out if the plans that everything would be built out by June were still the case, because around November, December, January, that was the plan. It basically is like not going to happen now. The plan is now for sometime in the spring of 21 that we believe those last 8 homes and the last 6 commercial properties will be completed. So that decreases overall sales. It increases the amount of permits we sell in next fiscal year. It increases the amount of inspections we produce. Overall, it results in there being from the decrease in the rates and the decrease in the amount of sales from the homes is an estimated $233,000 in savings as far as income goes from residential customers, and $28,000 in savings from commercial customers. And that is the original bill. Yes.
It's Linda Butler. I need you to say that again. I'm trying to understand that. Because they're not going to do that, we're going to save money. Is that correct?
It's because the homes aren't going to come online and
right. The
business aren't going to, it kind of is a wash, because next year they would be paying rates, but instead of paying rates, they're paying for permits. So it's kind of a wash overall when you look at it, but it does affect, you know, when they do start paying the rates. But by decreasing the amount of the monthly charge for a water meter, the monthly charge for using water and the per meter, it decreases the overall revenue by about $260,000 just for sales of residential and commercial water and sewer use.
Okay, thank you.
So that's the biggest chunk that affects the residents. That's the average monthly bill, is just by freezing the amount we charge for water and sewer services, and then going with what was presented in March for the solid waste, which we pretty much have no choice, and then the security and drainage, which we're way behind all the time. We leave those as the 2% increase for security and drainage and the 4.8% increase for the average monthly trash can. Okay. And then, so I'm going to talk a little bit more about some changes that we put into the budget. We also met with the owners of the CIA ditch, of which Rancho Murrieta is 1/3 owner, by rule of an agreement that was signed in 1984. We were able to determine what they thought the revenues that was going to be generated would be for the district based upon how much labor they believe needs to be spent supporting the CIA ditch. And they also said they want to have the pipe underneath Lone Pine Drive, which goes on the CIA ditch right prior to where it hits the equestrian center, for which the district is responsible by that old agreement to be a 1/3 owner of the need, or just about 1/3. And so they have proposed that it's going to cost about $96,000 to put this pipe repair in place. And so they're asking that we add $32,000 to the budget for that expense. Paul, I'd like you to comment on pretty much to begin with the revenue, because basically I spoke with the CIA ditch owners and I said, what is it you think it needs to be? And then we have a different opinion as a district on how much time and money we spend supporting the CIA ditch. Do you want to comment, Paul?
Sure thing, Tom. So there's a long discussion to be had with the CIA ditch and the owners and all the groups involved as it relates to that. We need to kind of wash out the concerns between the CIA membership and, you know, presented here, we're actually accounting for CIA ditch expenses. So that's excellent that that's being done. There's a lot of concerns to be hashed out as far as operation and maintenance. What we can convey, and what I believe Tom has done, is what we have expended on an annual basis in our other funds to cover the CIA costs for reimbursable back to the CIA organization. For future expenses, that's something you have to account for, but then again, just like any fund, you have to have money available to pay for it. So that's something to be discussed, and that's kind of just a starting point, I guess. Right, Tom?
That's it. And I don't think all the parties have been at the table in a while for the CIA ditch program. I know they haven't been at the table since I've been here, and it's going on about a year and a half.
We met last year in spring with you, Tom.
Right. So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
And so we need to do that. We need to weed out really how much of district operations can be built against the CIA ditch for our labor and our parts and supplies. And at some point in time, we need to decide if we're going to include this $32,000 pipe repair in the fiscal year 2021 budget. So this again, and I should preface this to begin with, we start with the Prop 218 budget notice. We wait the 45 days, and then we go to the board on the 20th and present the budget. So these are the changes we made to the Prop 218 numbers.
Hey, Paul, can you just elaborate a tiny bit on going under the road and what your opinion would be as to the immediacy of doing that?
I don't know the extent of the current condition of the pipe. I know the ranch members have mentioned that that's work that needs to be done. There was some back and forth as to between the district, myself, and the ranch as to where the delineation of ownership starts and stops. It notes that the Anderson property, again, as it's, you know, the immediacy of it, I don't know. The funding of this, the CIA ditch, from my understanding, as of last year, it's come to light to me that it should be its own standalone fund. Because it operates independently of the district. So that's why it's being presented, from my understanding, by Tom as an item in this packet. But Tom, where's the funding coming from this? Is it going to be a standalone fund in our budget?
The funding for the $32,000 and the $6,000 in expenses?
Yeah, all expenses for CIA.
The district's expenses come directly from the district general fund. So the money we spend, so if we spend $30,000 on the CIA ditch, we get supposedly, and again, this is a process that we're trying to unwind and get back on track with, because it hasn't been on track for a number of years. The district would take the $30,000 of our expenses, hand it over to the CIA ditch group, of which we're a third party, essentially, it's small percentage points different. And then CIA ditch would write us a check for $20,000. So we'd spend 30, we'd get 20 back, we would net 10. And that's the $6,000 you see on the line there under expenses. So our assumption is we're gonna spend about $18,000, and then we're gonna spend $6,000 and we're gonna get $4,000 back. And that $4,000 is in the 7,900. The other thing we would do is they would repair, under their plan, they would repair the pipe. It's about $94,000 estimate. And they would send us a bill for $32,000. And then we would pay for that. That's why it's an expense. Does that answer your question? So it comes directly out of the rates.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds, it's just the way you described it there, sounds a little voodoo. But when you go back to the, and it's been so many years since I even looked at that thing, but I have looked at it. And that agreement, even the basic documents for it, even have names of farmers that aren't even here anymore. I mean, it, we get essentially, if I remember right, we get one third of the responsibility, but virtually none of the votes, because it's a two-third, one-third kind of a deal.
Right.
What when you, and I, you know, in honor of this discussion we had prior to this, I walked it on Saturday. I mean, there's parts of it I won't ride, but I did walk it. Where does it specifically say in the agreement where the ditch ends?
At the property line, well, the district is responsible 100% for operating and maintenance of the CIA.
Exactly.
And that operation and maintenance ends at the Anderson Ranch, per the agreement, the Anderson Ranch property at Lone Pine Drive.
And John, this is Mark Martin. We worked this through. We looked at the parcel layouts, the boundaries of the parcels, and even brought this, I believe, before our legal counsel just to confirm the language as it's stated. And it was determined that it's on the Murrieta Equestrian Center side of the roadway, which would be considered that extent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that kind of answers my question. Yeah. So going forward, I mean, are you saying in this time that you want to have some type of discussion going forward that might include some restructuring on how we fund it or how we administer it or how we actually do the maintenance on it? I mean, what is it you're looking to do here?
You know, John, that's a really good question, and I don't have an opinion other than I want to bring the parties to the table and to have the discussion.
So does it make sense to say, okay, let's talk about this, but until we really get some consensus on what those changes or understandings might be, that, you know, we might hold on to our $33,000?
I'm just putting the numbers out there. There's definitely time to have discussions on it. We could have a separate meeting on it. We could reconvene a finance committee meeting in another week to talk just about it. It depends on what your guys.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying, ideas. I don't want, from a budget standpoint, I'm not asking you to do anything. I mean, I'm just trying to get it on, you know, the way you're presenting this, it kind of gives us an avenue to start to have these discussions. And so I don't want you to reinvent the wheel here, but I'm just trying to understand in my thinking and your thinking what this thing looks like, you know, before we, you know, I'm happy to budget it. I'm just, there's a difference between budgeting it and actually spending the money is what I'm saying, I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark. There's the larger issue of just even CSD's role in the CIA ditch. And this is something that Paul is definitely interested in, to have a relook of why is CSD involved. There are water rights involved, and it is a source of supply for water being provided. So that's why the CSD is involved right now, but it's a very limited amount. Most of the water travels through to the equestrian center and to the ranches beyond. And there's even some question if some of that water travels outside the district. And then the water that's purveyed outside of those interests is to that area.
Excuse me, this is John Sullivan.
Yeah.
But what question is there about water through the CIA ditch being served outside the district?
Is there none, John?
I don't think there
is not. But
Mark, I don't think there is, and I don't think this conversation should be muddied up by that.
Okay,
This is quite simple. Everybody, CSD operations, CSD administration, water rights, the service of supply, the source of supply for Laguna Joaquin water almost all summer long, and the fact that the CIA needs to be compensated for that. All of these things have been in the conversation back channel, and we're all happy to sit down and, you know, revisit the deal, because it goes back to 1929.
Right.
The CSD ended up with all of Rancho Murrieta Property Inc.'s water rights and Rancho Murrieta Property Inc.'s 1/3 interest in the Cosumnes Irrigation Association, which is a major water right that is, you know, predates almost every other water right here other than the riparian rights, which almost all the lands we're talking about here in the CIA area are also riparian to the river.
Right.
So, yeah, we're all about let's sit down and get it resolved, because operationally, once the ditch is turned on in the spring, it runs all summer long, and unless we vary it for purposes of ditch maintenance or leaving water in the river for Omochumnes Hartnell during a short water year, how much water goes into Laguna Joaquin and what they pay for it, all those things are things that need to be discussed, because the ditch and dam system is where this all started. It's not just the CIA ditch, it's the diversion dam at Granley's. Where is the 1929 easement?
John, we're getting way down the rabbit hole on this one.
This is an important matter, Mark. I just jumped on because we're the 32,000 that were the 32,000 that was we asked to have put in the CSD budget is your share of the CIA expenses for the repair at Lone Pine. That culvert has deteriorated to the point where if it collapses, there won't be any water for the downstream user, and it can't be. We don't want to run this in an emergency. And so we looked at it, maybe doing it before we get, you know, COVID-19 turns the Lone Pine traffic back up. But at the end of the day, that the operation, maintenance, and administration, yeah, let's talk about it.
And
you need to put the 32,000 in there, because if the work goes on and it costs 94,000, that's our bid number, then we share that 2/3, 1/3.
I'm happy to put it in there. If you guys are willing to talk about it, then I'm a happy camper. I'm not even fully cognizant of what the other issues, the back channel issues are that concern the RMA and the water coming out and the water around the townhomes and all that. Maybe we can get it all fixed.
Well, it has to get fixed, because an invoice has been turned out for 2019 that's never even been recognized, that was delivered to the district for water to RMA's Laguna Joaquin, and it's at less than the water rate that's in the memo that is going to be discussed later in this meeting. But you know that has historically gone on, and you know that freshening that lake uses the CIA facilities, and everybody needs to understand that we've spent since 1929, but I can tell you in the last 15 years, we spent close to $500,000 on that ditch. And so that has to be built into the formula of how water travels down the ditch for people who are getting it conveyed that aren't part of the ownership, the property ownership.
So to finish my thought, the rest of the non-MEC, Murrieta Equestrian Center, and ranch users are the place of use. And right now, like John mentions, RMA at Laguna Joaquin, and then there's a few other parties that are named, but they have not recently exercised. There hasn't been water provided to those entities because they're already hooked up to water sources, potable water sources. So it's all good for discussion, and I just wanted to lay out the larger issue that's out there. And I agree with John and both Johns that and Paul that it needs to be discussed. overall.
Tim, are you good with running with what we've got here? We're looking at the budget wise, plugging it in.
I understand the question, John. I'll say yes, and then I'm gonna. I don't want to cause staff work, but in this case, Paul, where I have a concern is if we have been doing a certain level of maintenance, and there's a past practice of how we do our maintenance, and now the ownership of the CIA ditch is taking into question that. I think we're going to have to go back, figure out what we do, how we do it, why we do PMI, preventive maintenance, inspections, work, et cetera. And those costs shall be, you know, borne as they are for the district. With that being said, I heard what Mr. Sullivan said about not wanting this to be an emergency. I just don't know if the ditch is in that bad of repair. So, you know, that I'll leave for another discussion. But in this case, when it's the actual cost of what we do, because we bear the responsibility to fix it and maintain it, we just need to codify what we do, how we do it, and then ultimately what those expenses are. And we move on. So in short, yes, I'm okay with putting it in the budget.
Okay, just a quick update to that. So as Mark has conveyed, there was a portion of time that was spent qualifying whether we were or were not responsible for the section in question. And Mark was saying that we are.
Okay. I'm
on Lone Pine Drive.
We agree with that, right? I mean, collectively, we're in agreement. I'm just trying to understand that.
Yes.
Okay.
It was, you know, like I said, we passed it by even the legal language of it. I believe passed our legal counsel. So
yeah. Okay.
Anderson Ranch, the Lone Pine cannot be considered. You know, it extends well beyond Anderson Ranch. It's a separate parcel itself, although it is a private roadway. So then in a logical and legal interpretation would be that it would be at the parcel edge of the Murrieta Equestrian Center.
Okay. So Paul, just last question and we'll move on. Then you're comfortable historically, you've got the data to track what we've been pitching in along the way to service the ditch.
The administration department, when we code our time to our timesheets, when I say we, myself and staff, for any item, you know, it's coded per whatever fund we're drawing from. We coded time to the CIA ditch, and Tom has those numbers for the past few years. Can you comment on what those numbers have averaged out on, Tom?
Yeah, it generally runs between 20 and 30,000. I'd say really an average of 25 is fair from how you code your time. And that has been... that amount has been disputed from well before I arrived at the district, which is why I really want to have this conversation, because, you know, the auditor will book the fact that we have this $25,000 money owed, but the owners of the ditch will not, you know, agree. And so there we end up in a stalemate. And rather than just pretend it's not there, I've been pushing to have this discussion, which it appears now we've talked about it very publicly, it appears that we can now have that discussion. My overall concern, and I believe the fact that, you know, it's black and white. If it's a regulatory requirement for us to do what we're doing, the ditch owners owe the money. If it's not, then we have an issue there. But I trust that Paul's doing what is regulatory required. So this is why I put it on the table, because I think it really needs to be discussed. We don't need to have a continuing agree to disagree sort of stance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Paul, one last quick, I'm sorry, one quick question. Then capital improvements along the way, historically, you have that data, you know what it's, other than routine maintenance that we do all the time, have we put any significant money into it?
Yes, we have.
Okay, we don't need to go into that now. I just want to make sure whether or not you have that data available to you. Okay.
Tom, with the statement that you just said, the concern I would have is we're going to have to go back and produce whatever those numbers are that are billable items. And that's going to have to be part of the package when this either gets readdressed at finance or at improvements committee or one of the two places. But maybe, and it doesn't have to be for this board meeting, please. But very soon, I would say, we probably need to bring it to the board itself, and then the board can dictate where it's going to go. But at the end of the day, what jumps out to me is if we've had billables out there and we have not collected on those billable items, I have some concern there. So with that being said, when you get all the stuff put together, the capital improvements, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's when you bring it to the board and then we can give some direction from there. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, next item.
Well, so we're still on the same item, right? We're still on the budget. We're just
still on the budget.
On the list, okay.
I'm just moving down the list. And again, we are proposing a net total of $165,000 and reduction to the proposed budget that was given on March 26th. So to begin with, we added $25,280. Now we're gonna do the reductions. So, and this isn't all the reductions, these are the major reductions. There's a lot of reductions in about 15 other accounts that bring the total to 165. So if you're sitting there on your calculator trying to make that balance, it's not going to. It's just, I wanted to focus on the primary issues. So another way to decrease the budget is to not contribute to the drainage and security reserve funds for this single year. Going back a few years, and I haven't gone back 20 years, but going back the last few years, the district has committed the undesignated property tax money. So that comes to the district as money we can spend on what we need to spend it on. It's not regulatorily required to be spent on water or sewer or drainage or security, but it's used to run the district. So those monies in the past few years, they've been committed 33,000 to the drainage reserves and 49,000 to security reserves. So that's those. And I'm gonna try and get through this and then we can go back and talk about the three bullets. So that's a $49,000 cut in how much we have to spend because we redirect those monies to actually cover expenditures instead of putting them into reserves. And putting them into reserves, like taking them off the profit and loss annual budget and putting it into a different account. Then is there somebody who wants to say something? Okay, so for the unrestricted reserves, there's about $83,000 in an unrestricted reserve account that's been established for some time. And I believe about 4 years ago, they moved money into these account, into the unrestricted reserve account for administration. And so I'm estimating a reserve study is gonna be 20,000 and the financial system ERP, which stands for Enterprise Resource Planning, it's a governmental term for how you run your finances. But that RFP to get somebody to do a business requirements analysis and build us an RFP over the next 12 months to be put on the street to do a full financial system replacement, that would, those two items I'm slating, they come out of the unrestricted administrative reserves. And then we had equipment and camera storage for security that we put in the original general fund budget. And we're recommending that the $23,590 be moved to security reserve funding for this 1 year. And so those are items result in 150 of the 165,000 overall decrease in the budget. So is there any discussion on any one of these items? I leave it open to you guys.
Tom, can I ask a question?
Yes.
The camera income that comes from the $750 impact fee.
Correct.
For the gardens. Quite a bit of that money has now been collected, and no request for reimbursement came from the hotel. We have a request for reimbursement on Raley's for their two parking lot cameras they want to put in. And we had talked about getting a camera across from the entrance to the Murrieta Mobile Village as part of the improvements. We moved a street light directly in front of that street so that one could be mounted on that street light. And those are the only items that I know that are outstanding on the gardens. And I think at the end of the day, you've probably collected between $40,000 and $50,000 for those security impact fees from the gardens, and none of it's been allocated. So if half of it was going to be allocated, that would be $20,000. I'd like to make sure that that's available to be used for those purposes in this, you know, in this budget.
This is Mark. So we have identified that the security impact fees are for to mitigate the impact of development throughout the community. And so it is the board, you know, we've been bringing items before the board to consider funding for under those security impact fees. I think there's been quite a bit of discussion on the Murrieta Village camera. As far as the requests by John, there has to be some discernment between what is a private property security camera system versus something that's to the benefit of the general public. So that discussion has to be had, and as you know, before there's a decision to expend security impact fees onto private security systems, cameras.
And so, John, in the original budget, the camera for the village is still in there.
It is.
No.
Yeah, that was my question too. I think we've committed to this like 100 times or something.
Yeah, it's in the budget. It's okay. Not. I did not remove it from the general fund budget request.
Okay.
Okay. So theoretically, between now and June 30th, we could come in and ask for the Raley's reimbursement. You guys can make a determination.
I think that'll give us the impetus to move forward with Mark's request.
What is this reimbursement you're speaking to, John? I'm not aware of it.
So the Raley's determined that they would like to mount two cameras in the parking lot facing the store. And so we made that change to the design so they could have those would typically be applicable.
So from what would
they are,
from what
they're,
would they
they're not for? they're not from the inside of the store, and they're in the public space in the parking lot.
They're in a private parking lot, though. That'd be akin to Walmart asking the public to pay for their security cameras in their parking lot.
Well, I think you need to read the addendum to the financing and services agreement that requires half of the money at least to be spent from the people who generate the funds.
All right. Well, we'll take a look at that, John, and have that discussion.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right.
Okay. Let's move on to the next couple bullets to talk about other ways we reduce the budget. In March 26th, I input a line item of $50,000 as salary increase pool for unrepresented employees. And basically, the unrepresented employees, which are, there's eight of us in the district, every year when we go through our review process, it's not a standard governmental process where you get a step every time you've been good for a year until you hit your top step and there you stay. Somewhere down the road, many years ago, Rancho Murrieta wanted to apply sort of a competitive or a private sector policy of creating a pool of money, which once you hit your top step ends up being a bonus. So it's called pay for performance. We started at 50,000, but because there's been some turnover because of the vacancy for Mark's position. I think 30,000 is a safe number, so we reduced $20,000 out of the original March 26 budget for that. And then we reduced the salary budget another $65,288, $60,288 because of Paul deciding it'd be best to go through a consulting firm to do the water compliance work versus a water compliance officer. So we basically froze that position, took it off the books. And a couple of years from now, if it's necessary, we can bring that back. So that gave us a total savings of $80,288. If anybody want to talk about that. Okay. And then basically that is the budget as presented. Amelia, I sent you a copy of the sample bill. Would you be able to pull that up? I know it's the last minute. There it is. So the bottom line is what we've talked about produces this. For the residents, a $1.77 increase each month or 0.95%. And for the residents of Murrieta Gardens and the Murrieta Village, a $1.28 increase. That preserves the $6 interfund borrowing. It also preserves the reserve contributions to the water and sewer capital replacement and capital improvement funds, or I think just capital replacement. So, and then, you know, you could go through any one of the line items. There's basically, I included a spreadsheet that had six separate spreadsheets plus a summary. And again, we're going to continue utilizing the same, keep going down, or maybe up. We're going to continue using the same methodology for dispersing money. But what you'll see is, and it's a good point that you're right here, Amelia, because we did a cost allocation plan, you'll notice in the budget that the administrative cost allocation to security has grown almost more than twofold, because of the fact that it costs that much more to run security than had been allocated in the past. So if you get a chance to review the spreadsheets, you might find that you have some questions, or maybe you already do, and I'm here to answer them. Okay. John?
I'm sorry. What page is that on the numbering system?
That looks like page 11.
Okay, thank you.
And it looked like I made up
13 as it's presented in the little packet, but it actually says page 9 on the bottom of the page, Tim.
Thank you, that's what I was showing. Thank you.
So again, that is what I'm proposing for consideration to take forward to the board meeting on May 20th. Any direction from the board to make additional changes, we can do it this time. We also have the option, you know, to wait until the 20th and make decisions at that board meeting. The board can choose to approve the budget with certain modifications, could be increases, decreases, moving money to certain accounts, but some of the accounts you can't change because we're required to keep the money we spend to support sewer and sewer, the money for water and water.
I don't see going forward that I have, and of course, you know, for reasons of disclosure, you and I have been over this before, and I know you and Tim have been over it before. I'm pretty satisfied with what I'm looking at here. I mean, I was after the $6, and it was just a personal thing that I thought it was not the greatest time in the world to be raising rates. And you got it. I mean, I can't complain over the residue. And I like what you've laid out here. So I'm, you know, if, of course we get the five people on the board, and if somebody wants to propose a change, I mean, we can look at it, but I'm pretty happy with what I'm seeing here.
I would concur, John. I would say at this point, staff has done a great job. I wouldn't change. My recommendation would be we move this to the board as is, and move it forward. We know that there are some items in this fiscal period that we're going to be working on. An example, what the statement's going to look like once we break down cost allocation process for security. So that'll be a column added. Again, we're going to work through this fiscal cycle on the new fee structure, those types of things. But as far as the budget presentation goes, I'm fine with it. And I would say we can move it on to this upcoming board meeting. And if the board members want to have some discussion in detail, we can do that. Otherwise, I'm more than happy with what we have.
I think and I am as well. So you can take that as a recommendation, I guess, to move it forward. But it opens up some discussions in three or four different areas here. We talked about one with John on the ditch. We're really looking at with this reallocation of the administrative overhead for security being what it really is. You're looking at a real true number as to what it really costs, and we need to figure out how we deal with that going forward in subsequent years. But going forward, I like what's here. I mean, the other part of that is, you know, we're promising we're gonna do a thorough and sophisticated reserve study, which, you know, I personally believe is when we look at this next year, there's going to be an increase in there. And, you know, combined with the state of the world at the moment and the fact that we're looking down the road at some significant increases, i.e. either in security or in reserves or whatever, I think it sets it up pretty well. I think we can take a break on raising the rates.
Okay, well, I think
and we can have further discussion, because this is type of budget that's really a maintenance budget, to where we're doing basic items, and the board needs to understand that, and the board then needs to give direction to staff on the priorities for customer service. And as you talked about, John, there's numerous other discussions, quite frankly, with this type of budget and what the goals are of the board. I think that we're going to have to look at those and make sure everything lines up correctly and or is reprioritized.
Okay. Well, again, to close out, to answer Tim's, to build on Tim's remark, yeah, the primary goals, board goals, are reserves, financial stability, and security. And those three items are the ones that I pulled out of the standard general fund and put them into the reserve funding. And that's how we're able to shrink this sample bill down to where it is this time. So with your recommendation, I'll move forward.
Well, yeah, I think we did that. So you're good.
Okay. Ready to move on?
We did item five. You want to do item six? Who is that?
Item six is just a discussion, and I'm bringing it to the attention of the Finance Committee. And we're also working with Dick Shanahan on this as well. The gentleman who bought the residences east, it turns out that since 2004, the company who did a lot line adjustment has been paying for an additional 15 acres worth of security and drainage fees, because the lot line adjustment was never recorded with the county. Back in 2004, or the lot line adjustment was never made by the county. Back in 2004, they took the residences, which was east and west were one big lot, and then there's this little sliver of a lot next to the homes that are currently built, a 15 acre lot. and they basically split the residences in two and left that 15-acre lot of residences east. Well, because we didn't know this entirely took place, and I wasn't here in 2004, but we began billing the owner of the residences east for the full complement of the 86.17 acres of land. But because we didn't know that it absorbed the 15 acres, we kept billing on the 15 acres, and they paid. And so then the gentleman who recently bought those proper, the residences east, is one who noticed when he went to the county to do lot line adjustments, and he's like, hey, if we've been paying these taxes erroneously all this time, I want my refund. And he's gotten permission from the buyer that he purchased from that he's entitled to the refund. And so we're working through the whole process with Dick Shanahan. And it's kind of muddled up a little bit in the earlier discussion we had in improvements with the 670 FSA and the residences east as a whole. But what I wanted to bring to the Finance Committee's attention is that there's a request on the table to refund the full amount going back to 2004, which in round numbers is about $60,000. The legal requirement is to go back 4 years, which is in the neighborhood of $16,000 to $17,000. So this is just kind of an informational discussion. And I don't know if you have anything else to say, Mark, but this is all I wanted to just bring it to your attention.
No, that's fine. You've laid that out correctly. Okay. It really is up to them. I mean, the decision of the board on the 20th is going to be whether or not you want to go beyond the statute of limitations that are there on the books, and also realize that once you establish that precedent, it's you're establishing it for the future. Also in cases like this. So it's up to the board to decide whether or not they want to establish that precedent. That's it.
Okay.
Okay.
I can hardly wait for that discussion. Okay. Item 7, utility billing update. Tom?
Well, we continue to try and refine our utility billing process because it is the heartbeat of running the district to make sure we get the money to pay the bills to run the district. And so we recently modified the statement about 4 or 5 months ago. We outsourced the production of the statements. We're getting a little bit better and quicker as to getting the processes through. And we've refined the e-bill. So when you get, if you get an e-bill customer, you now get the, you now get a link to Pipeline just right there in the bill. It doesn't say go to our website and look for Pipeline. It says click this button and you get the Pipeline. So, and that happened 2 months ago. Now the next thing we're working on is for people who have five or six or as many as 20 or 30 accounts, we've changed their process to whereby they get a summary sheet and underneath they get all their statements. And this allows us to, you know, save money on postage, but also allows them to have a much easier way to read the many bills that they have. And that's all I really need to say about that. We're just working on the process all the time.
So are you going to put the mailing machine in a museum when we're done or what?
Yeah, maybe. I think we're going to try and surplus it and see what happens.
Maybe you can supplement your budget. You can sell it to the Smithsonian or something.
It is the only one in Northern California that they still work on.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So, are we down then to item 9, comments, yeah. Suggestions?
Well,
no.
No, you're at number 8.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now I'm at number 8. Raw water rate study. Go ahead.
Yes, so this item before you is the raw water rate study. Part of the project was also to develop a recycled water study rate. And that was dropped off because of the issue of not being able to set a fixed amount with the Rancho Murrieta Country Club for delivery of recycled water. So that is on hold pending future discussions. So this is just focusing on a raw water cost rate. We have representatives from ClearSource Financial here to present it. And if you could go ahead.
Hi, Unmuting myself.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm Jeanette Hahn from Clear Source. Can you hear me and see me?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
I was also wondering, Amelia, it looks like I have the ability to share my screen. Would it be okay if I projected the slides? Maybe?
Of course, let me stop sharing and then you should be on. Good morning.
Good morning, thank you. Oh, actually, maybe if you could go up to see my name in the participant panel and you click on more, if you designate me as a co-host, I should be able to share. If that's possible.
Yeah, I just gotta find you real quick.
I'm Jeanette Hahn. Yep.
And you are, a host.
Perfect. Okay. And then I will kick that back to you. All right. Well, hello, everybody. Again, my name is Jeanette Hahn, and I'm representing ClearSource through this summary. And also, I have on with me our principal consultant, Terry Madsen, and a senior consultant from our firm, David Schroeder, just observing today. So I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about this. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to read our memo, but we are talking very specifically about the rate that would be imposed on a user who's drawing only raw water. So we're not talking about the rest of your water rates. And let me go ahead and talk a little bit about some fundamentals that I think help us have a common understanding as we then talk about the outcomes of this rate. So first off, I want to say that from our perspective, the provision of raw water itself should be embedded in all retail rates that you impose, because it is a fundamental service that you provide to all water customers. They're all drawing source of supply. So if you had an analyzed raw water rates within a comprehensive study of your retail potable water rates, you would very easily see the raw water unit cost of service in that analysis, or be able to derive it very quickly, because it is a component of water service. Now, these users who only draw raw water, what we would say is they are a distinct class of customers within your total retail system. And so we want to treat them on par with how we treat other customer classes within your retail system. So what that means is that we analyze the costs of service and how each class of customer uses those. Now, we're not looking at all of your customer classes. We are only looking at raw water. So we're having to kind of carve it off and do it as a distinct separate analysis, but we're trying to hold on to some of these ideals. And that is that these raw water, that customer class, they should not pay for services within the system that are not attributable to their acquisition of raw water. But on the flip side, they absolutely should pay for raw supply costs that are commensurate with the same costs embedded in the rates that your other potable water users bear. Another fundamental principle in approaching how we would price raw water is that in your district, we would say that source of supply is part of an integrated supply system. So all of your source, all of your sources work in harmony to provide for the total demands. They are all necessary to serve all of your customers. So again, that goes to the idea that the unit cost of service of raw water is embedded in the service costs for all systems. I'm sorry, for all customers. And then a few other things, raw water rates are a part of your schedule of water rates and fees and are subject to Proposition 218. The requirements that you have and how you set the size and structure of the rate, but also in how you implement that, the process that you walk through. And finally, as a rate, there is very well accepted industry standards for setting water rates. Those are documented in the American Water Works Principles of Water Rates, Fees, and Charges. That's referred to as M1. So we want to try to follow all of those things to create a good, solid, defensible rate. So very, very quickly, Proposition 218 from an analytical perspective in setting the rate has some expectations for you, which I believe you're very well versed in, and Tom was just talking about in his Prop 218 budget update for you. But very specifically, if I could underscore, the revenues from the rate may not exceed the funds required to provide the service. So we watch for that. We also make sure and emphasize that the funds you collect from that rate cannot be used for any other purpose other than for why you impose the rate. The amount of the rate, the dollar amount, cannot exceed the proportional cost of service attributable to the user. That's the purpose of the rate analysis, is to demonstrate that. And then also the rate that you impose, you cannot actually impose it if the service is not immediately available to that user, or if it's provided like a general service to the public in the same way that you provide to the person paying the fee. And so when we set a rate that is paying attention to all of these things, we can say that the entire system of your water rates, the water rates that you think of for your residential and commercial customers, but also this raw water rate, when they are set this way, they are internally consistent, and it helps prevent vulnerabilities in the rate structure from a Prop 218 perspective. And very briefly, I would just say that, you know, and this is, I'm sorry, this is still a poor graphic when I see it on the screen, but this is an excerpt from American Water Works M1 showing you the analytical steps for how you would develop a water rate. So we have attempted to carve off these steps, just do a raw water analysis, since it's not being done in the middle of a comprehensive water rate study. So thank you for letting me spend a little bit of time talking about the fundamentals of how we make rates. So now we'll talk about each of the components in building a raw water rate for you. So first off, we need a cost of service basis for raw water. So what that means is that in the analysis that was attached to the memo, you can see that we are identifying through the district's financial reporting the line items that would represent what we call source of supply, but very specifically raw source of supply. So when looking at all the direct costs that are coded to source of supply, because you do budget that way and report that way, that includes labor that's charged to source of supply, it includes power that you purchase related to source of supply.
Oh yeah.
We would add those. We also include in there, and
on the, what's up?
Amelia, you're do you want to mute yourself? It would also include an allocated share of the district's indirect costs. So you talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This is costs of the general administration and management of the district itself. A portion of those should be linked to source of supply. And we also
and identify how did they come up with that percentage?
Sure. So what we do is you actually have, through a cost allocation plan and prior budgeting, you actually allocate those costs from your general fund in total to the water enterprise. Now from that, then we take a look at each of the line items, whether it's labor or material or service or supply, and including those charges, and we assign an allocation metric to that. So in that case, what we're saying is that source of supply is going to bear a proportional amount for source. So
what is that proportional amount for source of supply versus transmission, treatment, and overhead?
Yes. Nice thing about sharing the screens is we can go straight to the detail. So when we get to general administration, it's about 12% of the total system costs for administration. That would be the administration costs within the water fund, but also the allocations that it bears. And I'm looking for the dollar amount here for the charges from the general fund right here, if I could. Right here. Here's, for example, here's a charge for general district administration, and we would say about 12% of that would be attributable to source of supply.
But what's the total that's allocated to the water department out of the admin is what percentage?
Oh, when we looked at the cost, I'm so sorry. When we looked at the cost allocation a couple of weeks ago, I believe we were sitting at around 36% of your total general fund admin costs allocable to the water enterprise in total.
I get that, but why does source of supply end up with a third of 36%?
It's not ending up with a third. I'm sorry. It's ending up with 12%.
That's 12% is 12% of 36 is one third of the entire water department, right?
It's 12% of water's share of general fund cost.
Sorry. No, it's not. If 1090 is admin and 36 of that is 392, 12% would be 47,000, not 127.
Of total general fund costs in the entire district that are allocated among the five enterprises, water bears 36% of those, which is in then results in this charge here. Of this charge here, we're saying 12% of that is attributable to source of supply.
I'm not seeing
it. Okay, I just like somebody to check on that.
I need to share my window differently. Thank you, Tom. Right,
thank you.
Thank you for reminding me. I'm going to stop this share and I will just. I'm just going to do my whole screen here. Let's do this. Okay. So you should be seeing the detailed schedules from the memo itself.
I read the memo.
Okay. Well, I mean, on the screen now.
I can't see the screen. I'm voice only in here. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So it's in attachment A of the memo, exhibit A of the memo.
Can you make it bigger, Jeanette? We can't see it.
Yes. Thank you.
I'm sorry, but Tom, can you tell me what the total admin budget is for the year?
Yeah, give me just a second. I can tell you really easy for what we're, well, I got it. Give me just a second.
For the district, I believe the question started for the general fund for the district, Tom.
Yeah, and I'm talking about the district admin number that we separately budget is how much? Is it $3 million or $1 million?
For admin alone?
Just admin.
I believe it is, and I'm going to tell you in a second. Let me open it. For the current fiscal year, the budget is 1.7.
1.7 million.
Right. And then for next fiscal year, it's currently proposed at 1.825.
So $612,000. Is what belongs in admin for the department, and you're saying a third of that?
No, so what we're saying is, so, and I'm sorry you can't see the screen, I went ahead and pulled up a prior presentation from a couple of weeks ago on cost allocation. The number that Tom just gave you, and let's just call it, say, $1.7 million for the general fund, what the cost allocation plan would show is that water should pay, actually, I need to get to the, what water currently pays is 39% of that, 39% of the general fund. That's what their current charges reflect. About, in total, about 39% of the general fund. And then in the raw water analysis, by looking at the line items and choosing metrics, we would say of that, 12% is allocable to source of supply.
Yeah, that's 79,560, not 127. Correct. 1,007,000 times 39 is 663. 12% of that is 79,560. Just saved $50,000 here. My math wrong?
I'm sorry, because we're not looking at the same numbers. I'm just going to admit that I'm not following what you're doing. So
Tom just said that the admin budget's $1.7 million, and $1.7 million times 39% is 663, and you said 663, whatever that number is, times 12% is the number, and that's 79,560.
John, it's important to note that the numbers she's working with are the you guys were using the 1920 budget numbers, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And as part of the process, we're debating whether to apply the new allocations to the 1920 numbers or to apply them to the 2020 numbers for the first time. And that's because we haven't had a cost allocation plan at the district forever. And so once you have an official document, you need to live with it. So it's kind of the mechanics of how we start the budget year, how we report during the budget year, and then how we close the budget year through audit. And that's the plan we have in mind. We have not decided, and eventually we're gonna have a new audit firm and they're gonna help us make those decisions. We've not decided exactly when to apply these percentages. So
is there a change in the percentage from 39 to something new?
Well, in past years, it's not right in front of me. Actually, it is.
So is that 39%, Tom? This is Mark. Is that 39% what is currently allocated based on actuals? And then we have a different number under the cost allocation plan. Is that correct?
The cost, they're almost the same number.
Very close.
Historically, the number being used for the past few years, like many things we inherited, water was 38.9% of the admin allocation. And as you can see here, it's 39%. So in the past, it was what it is. And for water, it's about the same. For sewer, it goes up a little bit.
Okay. Well, it's changing, even if you have $2 million, is at 39% is $88,000, not $127,000. I'm just saying if the formula is the formula, it's gotta show up on this memorandum, doesn't it?
Well, obviously we need
if I can answer that question from a Prop 218 justification, and I would like to give your staff credit for having had this conversation extensively with us. We are establishing this rate based on what has been adopted so far. Your current rates in place are based on something that the board adopted based on a policy document, the budget that was adopted. So to try to make it an apples to apples comparison, we are using the last adopted budget for the water utility as the basis, because the board took a position on that and that was established, and we're then in that way we're treating the customers similarly. Now if we roll over into the next fiscal year and have a new budget established, certainly then we can go ahead and update those numbers at that point, or the district could, but it's our preference to always base a rate on something that has been vetted at a board level and approved at a board level. And what we have right now is a budget for 1920. And that way we're not making these separate distinct decisions and therefore treating different customers separately.
So you're not uncomfortable allocating a bigger share of the water budget admins to source of supply?
That is what your current rates are based on, presumably. So we'd like to treat those customers the same. And then when you study the next year's rates, that will be updated and reflected accordingly.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure that that's based on your memorandum. I'm not sure that's accurate in regard to what's been built into the rate. You've only been charging less than a third of what this report says, correct?
Currently you charge, so I feel, and at some point, what I'd like to do is go ahead and get through, because then we can talk about where you are.
Right.
But to side, yes, currently when you impose the rate on a raw water user, you're imposing a rate of 11 cents per 100 cubic feet of metered consumption. What our analysis is showing that is that raw water actually is sitting around 35 cents per 100 cubic feet. We're going to get to that here.
Yeah, so one third, less than a third.
If I may.
We're charging less than a third.
So if we may, we can start to then go into the line item detail about how we allocate those costs and what should be included and how it might be refined. But that order of magnitude finding is not going to go away. And whether it's 35 cents or 34 cents or even 30 cents, the order of magnitude is not going to go away. And I believe that is going to be the substantive conversation for the board to have with respect to raw water.
I completely understand that. This memorandum and this analysis is about pumped raw water, not gravity fed raw water, right?
This is getting at a unit cost of supply.
We're talking about the recycled water, correct?
You're talking about pumped raw water.
Yes.
From the river.
Yes.
That goes into your lake and then is used as source of supply for the water treatment plant, or if it happens to be in a lake and it's gravity fed back into the ditch, then it travels down the ditch. It's your raw water source of supply. You pump, let's say there's 1,800 acre feet that we have to pump every year to fill our lakes, and then we have to augment it in May. And whatever we pump to storage for raw water users to fill up lakes, that's the total cost of source of supply, correct?
That's right.
And John, I want to point out this, the rate we are currently charging, I can't even figure out when it was established. It's been the same number for any budget I can look at going backwards.
So understand that this analysis that you've got this memo on is for raw water that got lifted and pumped either into a lake or somewhere. It's not the water traveling down the diversion ditch to the CIA customers, other than when you're using the ditch to deliver water to other raw water users.
Correct.
What this is an excellent analysis of the avoided cost of pumping up into storage, correct? This should be very accurate in light of what it costs you to, which is about what? Is it $87 an acre foot, something like that? I don't know the amount that was pumped. Paul, are you on here? Do you know how much was pumped to storage last year?
It's always around 2,000 acre feet.
2,000.
Yeah. So if you this is one of the most important numbers the district has never actually had somebody outside study. But if it costs you $158,000 to get 2,000 acre feet, your raw water pumping cost into storage is $79. Okay? And that's up, back in the 80s, it was $35. Now it's $79. That's inflation. But that is an important number to know. And you, as you said in this report, it's embedded in all the water rates because source of supply is embedded in all the rates. But that's for pumped raw water, correct?
Yes.
And it's water that's pumped via the license, the license that the district has, you know, the overall potable permit. It's not that this doesn't reference, you know, the CIA rights at all, although they're used to deliver the water.
So if I may, unless there's further conversation on that, I'll go ahead and continue on, and then everybody will sort of have a common understanding, at least of the rate analysis itself. So we talked about how we have to essentially go through the line items of costs that have been assigned to the or allocated to the water utility. So essentially what we do is recreate what is called a rate revenue requirement for the system as a whole, but also carved off then for raw water for all deliveries. And so, if this were part of a comprehensive water rate study, you would have these numbers. They would be easily cited and then used to create the rate. We are just trying to recreate it here. So of the total system, the total retail system, we have $3.2 million in costs. That's from administration, source of supply, transmission, and treatment. We also would say, and I was happy to hear it confirmed in the prior agenda items, that their prudent practice, and it seems like you're also doing this, is to make sure there is adequate reserve funding for ongoing system renewal and replacement. So we have replicated that through a basic metric of depreciation, annual depreciation on the system. So we have $3.2 million in total water system costs, of which through the line item determination of what goes to source of supply, $300,000 of that is attributable to source of supply. That was the pie chart referenced on the prior page. This is for all source of supply for all water delivered to those retail customers. From that, in a rate analysis, you then allocate that cost of service to the classes of customers based on a chosen metric. And as the memo described, we use a simplified allocation method by just looking at annual demand for this water. And as Paul just confirmed and is here, except we're showing this so that we don't have to go back and forth in units. We're going to express it in the absurd number of cubic feet, but total water pumped of 84.9 million cubic feet on an average basis per year. That's, and then we, of the identified raw water users that you would bill distinctly, they represent about 3.7% of that. So that is the water use that would ultimately make up this class of customers who would share in that cost of service with your other users who are also benefiting from this source. So if we take $300,000 as a revenue requirement for this part of the service, and we express it across annual demand, that means these customers alone would share just above $11,000 in the total annual cost. And that's in proportion to their annual demand. That can get a lot more complicated depending on when they use it and how you want to manage demand and if there are other agreements in place. But outside of a comprehensive rate analysis, we would not recommend that you necessarily go there today. So what that means is that raw water has a cost per unit sold of 35 cents per 100 cubic feet. So this is a number that is implicitly embedded in this schedule. You don't have to see, in this schedule of retail rates that you have, it's implicitly embedded there. You don't have to see those numbers, but just to say that those customers bear that cost of service in their rates. It can also be added as a standalone customer class to your schedule of rates, raw water rates, a variable usage rate per cubic foot. And if you identify additional users of that raw water, that rate can be immediately applied to them because it would be a rate that sits in your Prop 218 notice in your schedule of rates and is treating everybody the same.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
So on your calculation of annual water pumped, is 84,873 CCF. Isn't that 63 million gallons?
That's cubic feet right there. And so let's get to the, because I don't do conversions in my head. So I'm just going to go to the spreadsheet. That's based on 1,948 acre feet. 1,948 acre feet per year.
Okay, perfect. Great. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Hey, John, this is Paul. Hi, everyone. I'm going to just step in real quick and just for John's sake as well, that we are not looking to adopt this rate currently. We're going to take it forward in next year's Prop 218 notice, as we'd missed the deadline for the mailer already. So I understand your concerns with the costs with the CIAs and whatnot, and we can discuss that at a further point, but just at this point, you know, letting Jeanette move forward on what they have presented, and then they're going to give that to the district and we'll have ownership of it. And then come next spring, you know, winter time, we can start the budget process again and be ready for it. And so just a heads up on that. Okay. Please.
Well,
continue.
Yeah, I get it.
So I think in terms of our prepared comments today, I would go ahead and end it there. Other than to say, obviously, this is the forum to talk about the analysis itself. We had said that to staff, that certainly this is a great forum to be critical of analytical decisions that were made in the analysis. And if they make sense as we regroup with staff on that, we can certainly revisit the analysis and revise it based on your input and issue a final report that that at least identifies that fully loaded cost of raw water. So we totally recognize as well that you're going to be considering the ramifications to your existing users and how you would actually implement that. And so the memo did identify at least two known meters that draw raw water and identified, you know, what would that annual bill look like at a 35 cents per 100 cubic foot rate, compared to the district's current rate of 11 cents. So that's certainly something to look at. Though, you know, we would have to say, you know, when you're considering those rates, you have to consider the impact of your entire retail rate structure as well. So you definitely want to make sure that you're getting to a rate that is treating all customers fairly who come to the system and use it. So I think after this, as I said, we can regroup with the staff, we can issue a final report, and then we are, you know, at your discretion and can come back and talk to the full board on this. And at the time that it makes sense for you, this should be attached to a future Prop 218 process if you wanted to make a change in your rates. To impose the 11 cent rate that you have nowadays, that is codified and approved and can be imposed for raw water today. So any Prop 218 process would be to increase the rate based on the findings of a rate analysis.
Right. This is, again, to clarify, this is for pumped raw water.
Correct.
Under the district's licenses.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm going forward, before we get into the weeds on any further discussions, let me see if I'm understanding this, if I put it in layman's terms. Okay, we have meter A, meter B, and meter C through 3000. And I'm trying to understand that when the meter clicks off and the water's being used, if there are differences in costs and in delivery for meter A and meter B versus meter C through meter 3000. Does that make sense? In other words, we're trying to come up with a real cost for the transmission of that water to meter A, that transmission of the water to meter B, and the transmission of that water to everybody else. Is that a correct statement?
Is meter A and meter B a raw water?
Right, meter? Correct.
Okay. We are in fact trying, what we're saying is there is a cost of supply. There is a cost of pumped supply. And all customers should share in that cost equally. But then when we get it to meter C, which is not a raw water only user, we begin to layer other costs of service, such as the transmission of that.
Okay.
The storage, the fire protection, the peaking costs, all of those things that would go with that final delivery to a typical home or business.
Okay. So I'm understanding, are in meter A and meter B, are they sharing in the costs of, and John was alluding to, you know, there's five pumps out there, two big ones, three small ones. Are they sharing in the cost of that getting pumped? And is there water going through A and B that's not getting pumped?
I can speak for pumping, that to the degree that you are recording purchased power in your source of supply costs, which there is purchased power embedded in those costs. Yes, the cost of pumping the water is in this rate.
Okay. Okay.
But John, yes, you're right. In meters.
Meter B, A and B, right, okay.
Yeah, A and B are both RMA, but there is a C element if water goes directly down the ditch to them and gets delivered to meter A or B.
Okay, so what I think needs to happen, correct me, Tim, if I'm nuts here, is that's what I want to define first. I want to completely understand, okay, if the meters are the same, but the water going through the transmission of the water, if there's a difference, I just want that defined so I understand it. Okay. If there are places that the water is going before it goes through a meter C, what are the differences between where that water is going and what that water is doing in A and B? Does that make sense?
If there is a cost to the district of transmitting that water to that meter, yes, we should identify it to the degree that it can be identified.
Okay. All right.
So on
that's something that we can certainly take back and scrub with staff to make sure that we are in the rate analysis adequately understanding the transmission of that pumped water.
Okay.
Yeah. Laguna Joaquin can receive pumped raw water, or it can receive raw water directly through the CIE ditch.
Yeah.
Clementia is pumped raw water.
Okay.
And then the ditch has members, or, you know, property owner members of the CIA that get water out of the ditch, but it's not district water, it's CIA water.
Right. Okay. We're getting there. Okay. All right.
Okay.
We need to do more here. Are we done, or what's up?
Can I ask a question? John?
Which John?
John Sullivan.
Okay.
Yes.
When water goes gravity from the river into the ditch and ends up going into Laguna Joaquin and they end up using it, why doesn't the CIA bill the RMA directly? Why?
Because the district is the one that has the bill.
Was the last time the district build this the RMA for the CIA ditch water? Because I know we have a couple pumps built.
The different situation. The gravity is calculated and turned out on a bill to RMA on a monthly basis during the months it's drawing CIA ditch water. If it asks for additional water that they want to pull out of Bass Lake, they can add water to the ditch through that mechanism to get an extra one and a half cubic feet per second, which is, you know, 3 acre feet, a million gallons a day, additionally, if they want to do it that way. But then they will be, in this analysis, they'll be paying for the pumped raw water, not the gravity fed raw water, which, you know, still has a transmission cost to it to run it down the ditch. So we have discussed, and we turned out an invoice to the district for the water that was used in 19 and 18 and 17 after the construction, that, you know, shows that the RMA is getting about 198 acre feet of refreshed water versus their water right, which is, you know, around half a acre foot a day times the percentage that they have in there. So it's not all that much in volume. So they're utilizing more water in the Laguna Joaquin for aesthetic and fish purposes than they have do just under their irrigation right. And that amounts to about 198 acre feet. And that's about what, 89,000 CCFs. So under this billing method, they would owe substantially, you know, more than what we're showing the ditch use is, which is only 40 acre feet or $40 an acre foot. So yeah, I think, you know, we could do an exhibit that would help everybody understand that, John and Tim, if we wanted, I mean, go through and make sure everybody understands how that works.
Yeah, that would help me.
Yeah, I have drawings. I put together an operation manual for the CIA for district use. And I have kind of a sketchup of the conveyances, so we can show how that works.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's that one document which, you know, which we refer to annually to just know when they have water that they're owed coming down the ditch under their licensed right versus what they take in there for, you know, aesthetic and fish purposes.
Yeah, we can look at all that.
Yeah, and from our perspective, sooner the better would be great.
All right.
Okay. So what's the next step with this? What do we do with this, Tom? Or
what is it, Paul, circulate the operations manual so everybody can have that, and then we can refer to the documents. I mean, there are some charts and stuff in there that will help clear things up, I think.
Yeah, so but as far as Jeanette and ClearSource are concerned, Jeanette, I think we thank you for what you've presented. You've done an excellent job with that. What we need to discuss internally is, like John has brought up, is a potential conveyance portion that might be added in that we spoke to earlier relating to the CIA. And so the CIA is that Irrigation Association, Cosumnes Irrigation Association that owns that conveyance.
I think it would be good to we'll just regroup on that to make sure that, again, we're adequately portraying that with respect, particularly to the two existing users.
Yes, but for everyone else, as Jeanette has conveyed, we can begin. I mean, at the very least, we have been billing RMA out of Laguna, but we can, you know, begin billing elsewhere at our current rate that exists, and that there's no concern, like, in regards to that. Previous staff that was here didn't believe that we could bill per that. So ClearSource has clarified that for us. So thank you at least for that, among all the other hard work you've done. So what we need to do internally is reconvene and discuss. And I think that's going to start with the CIA meeting that we'll have. And that can be a portion of that discussion. And then go from there. Sound good, everyone?
Sounds good to me.
Yes.
Yeah, that works.
Okay. All righty. Are we moving on?
Screen again?
What's that?
Can you see my screen again?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Are we down to director comments?
Yes.
Okay. Tim?
Thank you. Again, staff, thank you for all of your efforts in this budgetary process. Tom, as we've discussed, I think that this budget reflects a whole lot of things, and all of it's good. The board's going to have to relook at some of the items that we've talked about in here. Some of it's going to be long-term. We also have off of this budget a few projects, and I think we're just going to have those listed out to the board so the board can make some decisions in this fiscal period, really what are going to be the priorities for staff within the confinements of this budget itself. So with that said, very pleased with what we have.
Yeah, me too. I have not much to add there. Any other questions from the folks on the call? Okay, if hearing none, then I guess we will adjourn. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye, everyone.